Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Thank you all for making it. We're going to be the number one media conglomerate in the world. The key here is act like a happy family. We're the Osmonds, and I'm Daddy fucking Warbucks, okay?
I always wanted one of you kids to take over.
People would do well to remember there's going to be a new sheriff in town.
Here's to us.
Hello and welcome to Still Watching Succession. I'm Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair chief critic Richard Lawson.
Each week we break down the latest episode of HBO series Succession. This week we are talking about season 2, episode 2, Volter, which is all about digital media. Richard, we know nothing about that, right?
This episode is a horror show. I mean, it is so scary.
It really is.
For media people, because it gets it so right.
It really does. Yeah.
It's a tough sit. It's a tough, tough sit.
Yeah. If you are just joining us, you know, we, like I said, we will not spoil anything beyond this episode. We're going to break down this episode. We would love to hear from you all. If you're watching Succession, you can email us at stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Your thoughts about Succession, who your favorites are, whether or not you think this is a good thing to watch in our current day and age. Richard and I are really enjoying it, so we hope you are as well. We are going to, I mean, like, where do you even want to start? I kind of just want to do the Volter of it all.
Let's dive into the scary part.
Let's just go for it. So in season one,
let's pivot to Volter.
In season one, this company owned by the Roy family, acquired Volter, which is, I was thinking it was BuzzFeed, but of course, it's Gawker is sort of what they're doing here. They're doing Gawker.
Or it's Mike.com.
I mean, it could be any number of things, but yeah. I've been told that it's modeled more directly on Gawker. And Richard, you worked for Gawker, so maybe you have some insight there.
Where I started my career in the media.
Did you have a beehive on the top floor? Did you make hipster honey?
Sorry, there was a little technical thing.
BYO beehive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there have been lots of things that have tried to talk about new media, you know, whether they're TV shows or movies. I think about Justin Timberlake's, I believe, first line in Friends with Benefits being like, traffic, 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 people. And it's like, okay, that's not what media companies feel like at all. This gets it so right. I mean, they've had the benefit of time, obviously more examples, but the way that they populate the Volter offices with the extras are so right. You know, there's a little detail in the background. I don't know if you noticed when Kendall is first addressing the team, there are those golden birthday balloons in the background, and they say 25, you know, and it's like, oh, they're all young and they're idealistic, but the stuff kind of seems kind
yes.
of not junky exactly, but yep. sort of basic, yep. but just presented well. Like the office is so perfectly designed, like the open concept, like all of it is just like dead on accurate, which makes it all the more, you know, frightening, because we see what happens, which is a larger company becomes involved. They have different priorities than this, you know, editorial outlet. And then when push comes to shove, the bigger company just says, "Yeah, well, fuck it. Like, goodbye," you know, which has happened many times, you know, not just to Gawker.
So my perception is that, so we've got this character of Lawrence Lee, played by Rob Yang, who, sold Gawker, or sorry, sold Vulture with like an inflated, sense of its value. You know what I mean? And then it's like underperforming. Basically, like it was a bad deal, in terms of how much, that Logan paid for the company. This was Kendall's baby. And so then it becomes, you know, with Kendall and Roman as chief operating officers, COOs, mm-hmm. I'll just say, so I don't mess up the titles. You know, they're tasked together to solve this problem, and it becomes, you know, a classic Logan pitting the two boys against each other in terms of like, whoever solves this problem gets a cookie. And, I love how this all starts, because Kendall's just in there looking at like report after report, and Roman is so anxious, and he like calls Jerry and he's like, "I don't know, Kendall's doing stuff." And like,
and she's like, "Why don't you try doing stuff?"
And he's like, "All right." And he takes a bunch of the young employees out and gets them drunk and finds out about their plan to unionize, which is another like very accurate thing of what's happening, in digital media, is this move, towards unionization. And, I just like, I love, like, he's like, "I have one idea, pivot to video." And Jerry's like, "I think they tried that." And I just love that pivot to video is just tossed off and then moved past, because that is like 3 years ago, actually.
Mm-hmm. And it was disastrous. And, yeah. They mentioned Facebook changing algorithms, which is another thing that we, you know, in media are kind of living in constant, you know, both worship and fear and of the Facebook algorithm. And that's another very like telling detail.
I cannot, like, you know, I take a lot of notes when I watch these episodes, and I wrote Facebook changed their algorithm in all caps, because like that is, they got the right consultants on this episode, mm-hmm. is what I have to say about that. Anyway, so they both come back with this, with Roman's intel and Kendall's intel. Kendall's all for saving the company. Roman's like, "No, let's ditch it," because of, you know, these various factors. Logan says, "Okay, like, let's get rid of it. I agree." And then Kendall executes his plan, and like, for as like broken and robotic as he still seems in this episode, it is, Kendall does pull off this very sharky plan that like, I was blindsided by. Like, I genuinely believed him when he was like, "We just, you know, like, let's cool with these unions. I want to help you. Feed me your ideas and we'll figure it out together, bros." And I like, I definitely believe Kendall. And then no, he was just trying to like mine them for ideas, stave off the unionization so that they could just strip the company. Were you fooled by this, or was it just me?
No, I totally was. I mean, I at first didn't really understand the about face. But then when he kind of explained that he basically got IP from them without, you know, and then fired them all, like, I was like, "Oh, that's, you know, horrible and shrewd." And he knows that it's horrible and shrewd, but he does it anyway. And, it was a total, I mean, this whole contained arc. I mean, it's really rich and just chock full of human drama in a way that I just found kind of staggering. And you know, cause like, you know, I am awfully close to the case on that matter, but like, I mean, I think it just adds another layer of depth to, Kendall's characterization, you know, that like, cause we've been sort of rooting, he's kind of our window into this world. Like, we've been rooting for him in a way. And then we see that he's just as conniving and ruthless and, you know, single-minded about Waystar, as anyone else.
Yeah. I just got like chilled to the bone, and like tossing these 20 somethings out on the street, you know, saying that if they they have to sign NDAs, if they post anything, they like lose all their severance, basically. Like, it's so brutal. And you know, and then once again, he basically says like, you know, "Because my dad told me to," which, you know, is a phrase, an unbelievable phrase that Lawrence Lee just like shouts back at him. Yeah, it's just like, you know, you and I have seen, we're very lucky to have our jobs. We've seen so many like bright, you know, driven colleagues get just sort of crushed in what's happening in digital media. And I just, I'm amazed at how right, how correct this all is.
And I think an interesting thing that arises from the scene where he, you know, breaks the news to everybody, that this show interacts with often is, and I won't speak for you, I'll speak for me. There is a thrill in watching the absolute power that Kendall has in that moment. You know, even though it's something, he's doing something bad, and I can absolutely empathize with these, you know, Valter staff members whose world is sort of, you know, yanked from underneath them. In the sort of propulsion, dramatic, you know, energy of the show, it's, there's something exciting about that he can just do that. You know what I mean? And so I think that's just another example of how this show really is trying to investigate our fascination with the rich and powerful and our relationship to the idea of that power and what it can do both for good, which we don't really see any of on this show, and obviously for bad.
Yeah. And it's fascinating to me to watch Kendall execute his father's vision, still read as broken, but also so incredibly powerful, broken and powerful at the same time, as you say. The other thing that Kendall does in this episode, I mean, like, I think, Roman calls him a broken robot and points out that, like, the episode opens on, Kendall's daughter's birthday at, Waystar amusement park, that has been like closed down for her enjoyment. And she comes up to hug him and he just like can't even like give her a hug back. He's just like a nothing. But he still has that, like he's still playing the game. He's broken and he's nothing. And he's still like all that he's left of is ambition, basically. You know what I mean? Like, I think he cares about his daughter having a good day. He's glad she's having a good day, but he's just like, he's scooped out. But he still wants to beat his brother, you know?
Well, it's the only thing he really has left, you know? It's the only thing kind of tethering him to, I think that, you know, in this season so far, Kendall is, I think, deliberately isolated from his, you know, his daughter and his, former, I guess, ex-wife, I guess. You know, he's really just, the only thing that he is, you know, an embodiment of a portion of the company, you know? And I think it's interesting that later in the episode, he thanks his father for shutting down the park. You know, she had a great time. She met, I forget the character's name, something with Snow.
Like Snow Joe or something.
Yes, Snow Joe or something. But he says it in a robotic way. He's saying it not because he's expressing genuine gratitude and that his daughter had a nice time, but he's saying it because he knows he has to say it lest he, you know, further alienate his father.
Right. He has to kiss the ring sort of thing. The other thing that Kendall does this episode, is gets Greg an apartment. Nicholas Braun, who plays Greg, is like 6'7". And so the visual of him checking out that like one studio with like a mezzanine or whatever it was called. And then going, it's a maybe, which is one of my favorite line reads of the episode. And then getting this like glorious huge apartment. And the reason he gets it is not because Kendall's a nice guy and helping Greg out, but because, like he needs him there, right? Like, maybe in a similar way that Tom needs Greg, but he needs him there. He like forces him to throw a party and Greg so nicely is like, could this maybe not be in my place anymore? And he's like, nope, sorry. It's definitely here. I believe Kendall refers to himself as a techno Gatsby, which was another line that I really love in this episode. And like we see, you know, we've seen him taking drugs already this season, but like he's just completely trashed in this party scene, and this is like the aftermath of like, I've had to do this horrible thing, now let me try to numb myself with drugs, with alcohol, with pursuit of women, like whatever it is. And I feel bad for him. How do I watch him gut a company that is like, that hits so close to our home, Richard, and then feel bad for poor Kendall in this party scene? Like, how does, what is the witchery of the show that it makes that work?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, so they think that, you know, the power he wields is corrosive to himself, you know, it's destroying him. And I think there is absolutely an innate human compassion toward that sort of thing, you know, even if, you know, politically or whatever, I certainly would not want to be friends with Kendall Roy in real life. But yeah, I mean, I just, you know, cause the show is so good at articulating exactly what it is that is eating away at Kendall, you can't help but sort of feel a sense of worry for him.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You can earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
All right, can we switch to Tom now? A Day in the Life of Tom.
Oh, yeah,
new,
please.
New co-chief of ATN. All right. So Tom gets this new gig where he's head of ATN, but he is like co-head with a character named Sid Peach.
Perfect.
Played by Jeannie Berlin. Jeannie Berlin, who we mentioned last week. This is maybe my new favorite character ever on television.
Even though, again, she's bad. She's Roger Ailes. You know?
She's Roger Ailes. She's so good. All right. So, like, Tom's day starts. I just want to, like, wind us back to the beginning. Like, Tom's day starts with, him wanting to put a large portrait of himself and Shiv on the wall of the blank wall of their new place. And he goes, to Saddam, to Wasadi? Yeah? Okay, I won't do it. And then he asks to have sex and she's not interested. And she still hasn't told him, like, that, you know, she's been tapped to do this thing.
Well, yeah. And the funny thing is when she's like, I'm just such in a different headspace or something, you know?
Yeah.
Which, like, she's saying to him, I don't want to have sex right now, but, like, the reality is that, like, it's a much different headspace that she's kind of talking about. And in the first episode of this season, when she proposes to her, she kind of games out to her dad, like, how you would, you know, keep the company alive. She talks about getting rid of news. And here she is now sending Tom off to his first day at school running the news company, knowing that if she were to become the successor to, you know, her father, that she might just do away with it. So she's right. Playing this really duplicitous game.
It's true. And like, this is the, you know, I don't know anything about the Murdoch children. Well, I know a bit about Lachlan, but like this reminds me, I guess, of like Ivanka Trump, who like tries to have this like veneer of progressive ideology that she somehow feels okay still working for her father. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And Shiv is not, she's not Ivanka. Like, I like her so much more than I like Ivanka generally, but like Shiv and Tom are like, they're liberals as far as like socially liberals. Their dog is named Mondale. You know what I mean? Like, Yeah. They're, so we see this most with cousin Greg when they walk into ATN and Greg is like, this is the one part of the company I did not want to have anything to do with, which is Fox News. Like, it feels morally wrong. And Tom, of course, like, once again, like, you know, a wet tissue, like, it has not a lot of issues compromising his morals. But what I love is that we get this scene with Sid Peach. And I don't know if Roger Ailes or anyone who's run Fox has been like a true believer, but like, Tom's like, I get it. We're all here. We all are like feeding junk food to the dummies of Middle America, fear mongering. I'm fine with it. It's okay. And then she's like, no, fuck you. That's not what we do. And even if that is what she believes they do, she's like, you're not allowed to like say that that's what we do and that's not what we do. And it's just this like great back-to-back scenes of her like welcoming him, being nice to him, telling him he can go ahead and run the meeting, and then just like ripping him to shreds in her office in a way that was like so enormously satisfying.
I love when she says, your father sends me one of you every 4 years. That train is never late. It's just such great writing, and she delivers it perfectly. Even again, her character is probably morally corrupt and bankrupt, but and yet I'm so happy that she's in the show now.
Yeah, she says that, and then he's like, I don't know, I'll catch up with you later. She says, not on your dying day. Like, it's just, I love her. I love her in the Sid Peach. I think, Siobhan says something like, you gotta eat the peach or something. You know what I mean? Like, you have to make a space for yourself. You're being put in a co-position with her. And, you know, Sid's like, no, I mean, what's so funny, I'm sure she's not, based on this woman, but she reminds me so much of this woman that I worked for, in San Francisco, whose name is also Sydney. She's just reminded me so much of, I've met so many women like her. And I was just like, yep, here it is again. Like, I didn't work for Roger Ailes, but I worked for a woman like Sydney Peach. And it's just like, it's a perfect, he's just capturing these characters so perfectly, you know, so.
Yeah. And I love that in this episode, between the stuff at ATN and the stuff at Valter, you know, and again, this is because I work in media, but like, I love that it's about media, like, cause it's about it intelligently, and in a funny way, in a sad way, like, but I, whatever the family industry is, it could be coal mining, it could be whatever. I'm just glad that they're digging into it, you know? I'm glad that they're actually addressing what the thing is. I think a lot of times, in movies and TV, when, you know, you have someone who's like running an industry or whatever, that the show or doesn't actually seem that concerned with the mechanics of that business. The business is just kind of the platform from which to tell, you know, human drama stories. So I like that they're actually like investigating the particulars of the industry that has made them so wealthy.
Right, exactly. And so like, and we should say that the reason that Tom really wants to be at Fox is it feels, or ATN, is that it feels like, the news division is like the most valuable. And I would say, I mean, like, the Disney merger complicates it, but like, the Fox News being a crown jewel, for better or worse, in like sort of the Fox Media Corp is like undeniable in terms of its power, its political power. And that's something that Tom wants a taste of. And, we get this early hint that, and this isn't a spoiler, I don't know, but we get this early hint that we might see more of ATN either over the course of this season or in subsequent seasons, when she mentions that they're going over the format of the debate. And so we have to remind ourselves that there is like a presidential campaign sort of slowly burbling in the background of this show. And so like what the messiness of Logan Roy's son, Connor, running for president when he owns the equivalent of Fox News,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And when Shiv is working for another candidate in
exactly.
Gil. Yeah.
So, do we want to talk about Connor or do we want to talk about Shiv and Gil? Which one?
Let's go to Shiv and Gil first. And then we can get to Connor.
Gil, played by the great, Eric Bogosian. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Like Bogosian?
Bogosian. Oh, there it is. Yep. That's right. I was like, nope, that didn't sound right. That sounds right. Great, great actor playing an obvious sort of Bernie Sanders, type character. And, I don't know. It's just funny because like when he popped up as this sort of like Bernie counterpoint, last year, you know, we were just sort of like still dealing with the first Bernie run, and the fact that we're like in the midst of the second Bernie run already, I'm just like, feels like time is shrinking, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you know, Shiv has this decision to make, like, does she immediately leave this camp? Does she trust that her father's offer is real and leave this gig she has as like running this presidential campaign? Especially when she's been offered potentially chief of staff for Gil if he wins the presidency. Does she leave him, or does she, what Tom advises is that she tries to sort of like slow roll it and do both, until she figures out whether or not her father's offer is for real. And I love that Shiv like has this strategy session with him, goes like, yep, that's the play. And then does not seem to do that. Either she does not seem to do that, or she fucks up the attempt to do that. What is your read on that? Like, no, I quit. No, you're fired. Sort of scene.
Yeah, that shift felt very abrupt. I wasn't sure if I had like missed something about why she was kind of immolating in that way.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe the thinking was that she wanted to make a clean break, or not a clean break, but a definitive one. But I'm not really sure. I mean, that felt a little bit. I guess I just didn't really know where that came from.
Yeah, my read was that she, you know, Tom's like, the play is you sort of consider both. And then my read is that she was like, yeah, that's the play. And maybe like Shiv's thing is she asks Tom for advice and then does the opposite every mm-hmm. time. Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't blame her. So that's sort of what it read like to me. She's like, yeah, that's the play. Nope, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to burn this down. But she has an interesting scene with Logan in this episode where he talks about how he envisions her coming into the company, and then it's like a 3-year plan, and she's impatient with that. And then he's like, okay, well then come in right away. And then she's like, no, I have other things I need to do. And he's like, he's already growing like frustrated. Like, it's already a bumpy process. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you see his impatience immediately with that, with her not being completely compliant and grateful for the chance, you know. That's mm-hmm. my read on that. So and we should also know that Marcia pops in that scene and is very like sort of sniffing around and it's like, what's going on here?
And then he tells her to go turn off the Alexa.
Yeah. And then we also, of course, in this episode have Shiv telling Tom you know, that she got the offer, and Tom taking it like kind of as well as he could, which is not very well.
Yeah. It's such a good bit of acting on Matthew McFadden's part. And I like when he says something like, if you want it, it's okay to say that. Like, he's giving her permission for something. Like, she's so past that, you know? She's not concerned about hurting his feelings or whatever, but he thinks he's being the magnanimous one, the kind of consoling one. It's just another example of just like how she is like 18 steps ahead of him at all times, and he has no idea that she is.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like, he plays these like weird old fashioned traditional roles with her when it's just like, that's not at all who your wife is at all, even mm-hmm. close, you know. It's just, it's hilarious. And yeah, he's incredible in that scene. He's just sort of like, holy shit, I thought it was going to be me. Maybe it could be me. And now I have to deal with the idea that like, no matter how high I climb, I will always potentially be second to my wife.
Yeah.
And
also the absurdity that it would ever be him, that he would even think that.
Right. But he does, you know, he's right. He says, you saw what Logan did to Kendall. Maybe it's about keeping your options open. Mm-hmm. You know, and just sort of like this idea of like, if, whenever Logan brings one of them to heel, that's the most important thing for him. He just needs to bring them in to heal, and then he doesn't he doesn't care about them right. until they rebel again, and then he brings them to heal. So, but this idea of like, of Shiv trying to believe that this is going to happen for her, but then also being, and once again, that's where that like weird smirk that Sarah Snook does in this role comes into play, where she's, you're just like, does she feel confident? Does she feel insecure? It's both at the same time. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah. And we see some of the kind of brat jump out where she makes the snide joke about, you know, do you want some Purell or whatever? Because he touched a commoner, you know, like I think that's partly about her putting on the rich heiress suit again.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, Connor has moved to New York, because his, wife, Willa, they're married, right? She's in a play. And so they're like living in a hotel and have a party there. And, I just kind of love her. Mm-hmm. And, and I love Tabitha. Like, these are the Roman's girlfriend. Like, these are the people that I'm just sort of like, I actually might want to actually spend time with you. Maybe. I mean, I'm confused why you want to associate with the Roy family, but I am kind of interested in you. So
One thing about the stuff with the little stuff with Tabitha in this episode where, you know, where they have, Tom and Shiv over for dinner, is the first season seemed to kind of be intimating that Roman is gay, or at least not entirely straight. And they haven't addressed that yet, you know, two episodes in. So I'm wondering if that's going to pop back up again.
My read on the first season, maybe gay, but like definitely like some sort of sexual. No, I mean, like, I don't want to equate sexual dysfunction with gayness. Like, maybe he's gay or at least has some sort of, you know, issue with straight sex. Right. I don't know. You know what I mean? So one or the other.
What was that? But it was also like his obsession with that trainer. Like, I don't know. So.
Right. Yeah.
So I'll be curious, what they do. That said, that doesn't mean I want Tabitha out of the picture. Caitlin Fitzgerald is such a great actress and, she's fun to have on the show. And something I also noticed in the dinner scenes, I tweeted about it, is I'm obsessed with everyone's height on the show. Because everyone's really tall or really short, and the way that they kind of play with those spatial dynamics, like when they're all, you know, crowded into the sort of foyer, and you're like, Kieran Culkin looks tiny, and Matthew McFadden looks huge, and Caitlin Fitzgerald looks even huger. Like, it's just a very funny dynamic that I can't imagine is not deliberate.
Yeah, she's like 2 feet taller than he is. That's one of the many aspects of the dynamic that I love. I want Caitlin Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Debicki to be in like something together where they just like loom over everyone. She was so good in Masters of Sex, and I like she gets to be much more playful, and viperish in this role, and I really love her in it. So no matter what is going on, I hope that Roman finds something that works for him. And I hope there's still room for Tabitha on the show when he does. I guess would be my answer to all of that. And then I guess, do we need to like check in on, the most unlikely presidential candidate, Connor Roy?
Yeah.
And once again, I feel like he's like, this isn't Veep. They're not doing the presidential election. That's not like what they're concerned with, but like it's impossible to divorce, the Richie Riches and politics at any point, but especially at this point. And I think, what else could we be heading towards other than a Connor Roy presidency? Of course.
Yeah. I mentioned last week that, I think that Connor is kind of like the best satire on the show, because it just feels so pertinent to right now, where like here we have this guy who by choice, I guess, didn't want to go into the family business, but wanted all of the wealth and the sort of access to power that comes attendant with, you know, the family he was born into. And now, after years of that kind of entirely unearned access and privilege and all that, just sort of thinks that he can do stuff that he can't do. You know, like I just love that assumption of worth, that he is so imbued with, because it feels very apt to a lot of people, currently running the country.
Yeah. And it feels very, and I guess it's Trumpy, but it's also like, feels very George W. to me. He always feels very W. to me. You know
it
what
feels
I mean?
W. It feels like, I mean, granted, these people have made things, but it feels like Elon Musk thinking he can solve the crisis of Thai Boy Scouts caught in a cave or whatever the fuck, you know? And it's like, why do you think you can do that? Because you have money and you have people saying yes to you all the time, you know?
And that is one dynamic that I think is interesting that, you know, I've seen Brian Cox make this distinction between Logan Roy and Rupert Murdoch, is that Logan Roy is like somewhat much more of a self-made man.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Which just, you know, sets him apart from Trump and a lot of other, like, you know, quite rich people who inherited their wealth and he built his wealth. And so this contrast of, I just like all the things that set Logan apart from his children. Like, he resents his children for how, like, soft and privileged they are because he was not. They're American. He's not, you know, like, there's just these, like, weird, distinctions, or, you know, that it's like, you're not really my children because you've been spoon fed too much. And, I think that's much more interesting than, like, we have money and we've always had money sort of, dynamic.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else, we want to, as we cry bitter tears over the state of digital media, is there anything else, we want to, talk about in this episode?
Yeah. I mean, if anyone wants to offer me a backup job, just in case, I would appreciate that. You can email us at
stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Yeah. So it is the time of the show where we pick our most successful successor.
Mm-hmm.
Who you got this week?
I'm going to go with Roman. Okay. Because the way that he, by doing very little, got his brother to, you know, tear down Walter, tear down more of himself, you know, like, yes, at the end of the episode, we see that, Kendall has earned some favor from his father, and Roman is sort of, like, shocked by that. But I don't know. I still think in the long game, the fact that he kind of manipulated that whole situation into happening, was quite a victory for him.
And then, I gotta go with the peach. I would be incredibly happy, if Sid Peach wound up, running all of Waystar. So, you know, there you go. Sid Peach, Roman, Roy, the names of the show are just so incredible. Richard, until next time, where can people find you?
I'm going to be buying balloons for my 25th birthday. Gotta go do that. And I'll be tweeting and I'll be writing at bf.com. Where will you be until we visit the Roy's next?
Well, I'll obviously be tending the hipster beehive on the seventh floor or whatever. And you can also find me on vf.com. You can find both of us on the podcast Little Gold Men. And we will see you next time.
The Run Through with Vogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz, who should be the mayor of New York.
We all support that. We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.